Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday, middle of the week, and we're talking some USC football with Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist. Today, we're going to talk some spring football, of course, almost the halfway point for USC spring football. It's going to be a shift. We're going to talk to Dan about that, what's going on in position battles and some position switches and things like that. If you have any questions or comments, you can drop us an email, podcast@USCFootball.com. Or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. All of our contact information is there. You can go to iTunes and subscribe, leave positive feedback. That would be wonderful. We're also on the Google Play, Audio Boom, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, lots of different ways to find the show. And if you find a place that we're not on, just let me know, podcast@USCFootball.com, and I will contact them and make sure they carry the Peristyle Podcast. Almost 10 years now we've been going. So the longest running USC podcast out there. Thank you guys for downloading and listening. Hope you enjoy it, and let's bring in Dan Weber and talk some spring football. What is up, Dan? How are you?
Great. We enjoy downloading it as much as the listeners do. This is always fun to do, and actually I think it helps us in some ways clarify our own thinking about what's going on and how it changes from day to day, week to week, year to year, and it's fun to do, and the questions make it even more fun because, as you know, folks think about things we're not thinking about, and that's pretty cool.
For sure. And we had an interesting show. So sorry we haven't had a show for a few days. Saturday after the scrimmage, Harvey Hyde and I jumped into one of the classrooms, I think in Wade Phillips Hall, and I think that's what it was, like a chemistry room, and we did a podcast in there.
All right, yeah.
Good reviews. And I thought it was well. I'm doing a bathroom remodel now, so it's a little crazy, and I'm going to be out of town a little bit next week. So be a little sketchy on the podcast, not exactly the same routine that we'll normally be doing. But I'm glad you could come on today a little bit later in the day on a Wednesday than we normally do, Dan. But thanks for coming on so we could talk some football.
Yeah, it's good. You know, with Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Wednesday is a good time to talk. And we see different things each week or different things each day. So it, you know, it gives you, okay, you were there for Tuesday. Now let's reflect on that and where we're going. And, halfway through tomorrow's practice, Thursday's practice will be the exact halfway point in spring practice. But it does seem like, and when you just ask them, they all just shake their head and say, we are so far ahead of where we were last year at this time. And there's no question about it. And I think somebody was trying to get Clay to say, because the defense, he had said a couple of practices in a row, defense ahead of the offense, that the offense was behind. And what he said was, no. It may be behind the defense. It's not behind where it was last year. You know, it's way, way ahead of where it was last year. It's just that the defense is getting there, you know, a little quicker, like you might expect, and with the numbers of, you know, veterans and returnees and what have you. And, you know, you expect the defense to get out front a little bit. But as a group, you know, except for special teams, which we'll see how that goes because of the loss of, you know, Adoree and Matt Bormeister and Zach Smith. So you got some. Other than that, this team's pretty far ahead of last spring and probably ahead of last August, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think so much so where, you know, they kind of got a lot out of those first seven practices. And Clay Helton said now he wants to take a look at really building up that second team. Now, not all the position battles are set or anything like that, you know, far from it. But I think he feels comfortable enough now that, hey, they're going to need to be able to play more guys. They need the two deep established. There could be injuries and all kinds of stuff. So it looks like the last eight practices might be a little bit more about the second team than the first team.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. I think those are the guys that will benefit, you know, the most from being coached up. And the more they're coached up and the more they are capable of competing, the better it is for the first team or the first group. And so, and then secondly, I think there really are a lot more of those guys that are in that category of young, talented, but could play, can play. So I think you're coaching a much bigger group than in years past now that they're legitimately, full scholarship program at this point, but still young because those numbers came in the, you know, first two classes, let's say, compared to, you know, the upper classes. So, I think it's a really smart thing, you know, for Clay to do. I just think it's the way to go. Coach that competitive. I do think, and I know we probably don't want to overstate, you know, going back to the Pete Carroll era or whatever, but if there was one thing that Pete did better than anybody else, it was that whole competitiveness thing and bringing it out at practice and then having it be the thing that, you know, carried you through games where you just felt more competitive, that the more competitive things got, USC would, you know, the kids, USC players felt like they had the advantage, that they just were competitively ready to go. And I like the idea of coaching in that whole competitive angle at this point in time. I think the numbers are there, the talent is there, the guys that you're coaching that far are the younger guys, and the better they do, the harder they push, the sooner they get there, the more they push those, you know, the guys that you would say, well, these are, you know, these are the starters, these are the, you know, the first team guys. The harder they get pushed, the better, I think, at this point. So I think it's a really, really good way for Clay to finish out this spring, because the better and the harder and the farther they come, the more the rest of the team comes along.
Well, let's jump into some questions, Dan, and we'll talk more about spring football with everyone, get to know what everyone wants to know, or get into it. Tarek had a question. What have you thought of Marlon Tuipulotu thus far?
I think he looks like he belongs, and I think he looks like, you know, that somebody's watching out for USC, because when you lose to Stevie Tuikalavatu, someone you didn't expect to be have that kind of impact last year, and, you know, here's a 25-year-old married guy, you know, from University of Utah, and now you've got, I don't know if he's 18 or 19, should be still, you know, figuring out who to take to the prom, and Marlon, and he's out there. He does not look like a freshman. He looks like, you know, I was telling somebody the other day that if he got off the plane with an NFL team, you would not pick him out as the college freshman. He does look, you know, he looks like a finished product. I really like the fact that, you know, he's 305 pounds now, and he's got all those wrestling skills. You know, that low center of gravity, that really good balance, that quick twitch, you know, first move. He's got so much going for him. I mean, if USC could be lucky enough to get a freshman to come in here and take Stevie's place, that's one of those things where you just say, wow, how good was that flip of him at the last minute. That was somebody is watching out for your program when you can pull that off, and that's a great job. But, what a great place to start when you're looking at, you know, the new guys, the freshmen. Just don't expect a freshman to be able to do that. You know, Leonard Williams could. You know, there are a few people, you know, Sean Cody could. There were a few, but don't expect it to see it much.
No.
And I think we might be seeing it.
We had a question from Chris. He says, how do you see these players developing this spring camp, and where do you predict them to be in the depth chart? after fall camp. He lists four players. You want me to just give you one at a time and you can give your thoughts?
Sure. Yeah,
so first one is Jalen Green.
I think he's going to have a real shot at being out there with the first group. He's smart. He's tough. He's strong, big, strong. He's very athletic. And they love the fact that they can, you know, double pass with him and they can, you know, run the flank or reverse. They can do a lot of things with him. And he's just a savvy guy with really good athletic skills. I mean, he's got the poise that you pick up, you know, being a quarterback. He got a lot going for him. They really like having him on the field. So I think he's stronger. He looks stronger, you know, in terms of his situation than maybe we would have guessed. We thought he would, you know, and that says some good things about the fact that he's going to concentrate, just play wide receiver. So, I think he's in a really good place.
Jacob Daniels.
Good question. I don't know. He looks like a player. He's big and strong and, you know, he's going to get a chance with that. He's the perfect guy that they're focusing on for, like, this second group as to where can he come? How much is there? You know, how much does he want it? How much, you know, is he going to work at it and all that kind of thing? I think we're just going to keep our eyes on him and see where he ends up. But you know, he looks like he has it within his power to do it if he really, really wants to do it. And we'll keep our eye on him. That's a good question. We don't know, I don't think, yet.
Jonathan Lockett.
I think health is, you know, coming back from surgery, we'll have to see where he fits in. I mean, I think, again, he's another one of those guys that can, you know, be that in that second group and be very, very valuable with his, you know, experience, his athleticism. And, you know, once he's healthy, again, I think he can be really, really valuable and give them a chance to rotate in ways in which they, you know, we haven't seen them be able to do in a long, long time. So, but again, you got to get healthy and that, we're not sure how long that's going to take for him to be, you know, totally back.
And then finally, it was Akili Ross.
Well, his first impressions are he really looks like he's going hard and really wants to make an impression and really wants to be as good a player as maybe his athletic talent and his size and all that would allow him to be. And the coaches are noticing him and they're talking about him. And, you know, there's a chance, you know, for him. And again, he's another one of those guys that I think Clay is talking to and saying, we want to focus on you guys. We want you to really be ready and we want you to be able to be, you know, a guy that we can plug in or a group that we can plug in. And, I think, you know, I'm impressed with what I'm seeing of Akili thus far in spring.
All right. Let's see. We'll move on to the next question. Matt wrote in. He said, Dan Weber said after the scrimmage on Saturday that things were different than last year at this time. I want to hear more about that. How is this USC football team different than this time last year? And you kind of talked about that a little bit, but maybe, you know, you can go a little more.
Well, I think, like on defense, for example, I think they were really just trying to figure out how do they communicate. You know, it's really important for Clancy's defense that the linebackers can communicate with the D-line and the linebackers can communicate with the secondary and the secondary can, you know, communicate with the linebackers and the D-line can communicate with them. And all of that, that was really a learned something that they had to learn to do. I mean, you had, you know, some of the guys like, you know, say, who had played for Clancy a couple of years before, but they were all feeling their way around. I mean, they just were trying to, you know, figure out exactly what do we want to do and how do we want to do this on defense. When you see them now, You don't get any sense of that, that they're trying to figure out how to communicate. And that's even, you know, guys like John Houston and Jordan Iosefa, who are mostly special teams guys, they just seem to be way farther along in terms of, I think Jordan got to take over for Cam Smith Tuesday, and no hesitation, taking a step back or anything like that. So you see that on defense. On offense, what you see is Sam Darnold is in a place that he wasn't even in last fall. I mean, end of September. He's in a way different place. I mean, he looks better than he did in the Rose Bowl. I mean, he's figured some things out. I think he knows what he can do now. They know what he can do. So you see them doing things on offense we maybe haven't seen them do before with the quarterback. I mean, when you have a quarterback like that, that changes everything. I think Ronald Jones at 205 pounds, probably 10 pounds bigger, doesn't look like he lost anything at all. I mean, I say lost. He looks just more powerful. He looks certainly as quick and stronger, more definitive in his cuts, I think, and more able to just, run the ball up in there. I think they're going to do more of that. So we're seeing more of that kind of thing. We see three tight ends who can run patterns and get down the field and catch the ball. That's something you didn't have. Wide receivers, you see a lot of, obviously when you lose four veterans like they did, you got a younger group. There's no question about it. But you see Avelis Jones, who's got something that nobody had on last year's team. I mean, unless they would have played, Adoree, at that spot. I guess they did, some, and you see some of that kind of, explosiveness and that necessity, if you're the defense, to make sure you know where he is. And I think you're seeing where it took maybe a little longer for Sam to develop kind of a sense of where each of his receivers would be and what the timing would be. I think that's accelerated. Even with a younger group, I think Sam has the ability now to pick up more quickly on where those guys are in their development and just to have an understanding of how everything goes together. So that's kind of what you mean by the fact that they're in a different place. And let's face it, last year on the defensive line, for example, you didn't have a Stevie. This year they're, fortunate that they've got a Marlin. So, there are lots of ways you look at them and say, this looks like more of a finished product. I thought by the end of the spring, it looked like they were getting there. The spring game was pretty exciting. And part of the reason was you got to see Sam do a lot of things and think about how, you remember where Clay said, well, they couldn't make a decision at the end of spring. So this year you've got the decision made, obviously, with Sam. And they just look, it more looks like they're getting ready for games. Where sometimes in spring it's just, really doing the basics and just trying to, see who you got and where you are and all that. This team looks a lot closer than if you said by the end of the spring they were going to play Notre Dame or whatever, you'd say, well, that'd be fine. Let's go. You wouldn't have said that last year. So they're in a different place. No question about it.
We got Anthony in L.A. He says, hashtag fight on. Great articles and podcasts. As always, guys, two questions. First, watching Vavai running the ball is awesome to see. He's got elusiveness like Justin Davis, but a downhill runner like Buck Allen. Can we anticipate seeing him on the field sharing snaps with Akacedric Ware this upcoming season? And the second one, he says, I'm interested to see how the competition between Isaiah Langley and Jack Jones goes. Do you anticipate Jack winning that competition? Thanks, and as always, guys, fight on. Anthony in L.A.
Yeah, Anthony, I think also you want to put Steven Carr in that running back mix and see where that goes. But yeah, from what we've seen, it's hard to imagine that Vavai is not going to be part of the mix. He just seems like, you know, he's got enough of this and enough of that. He just runs not like he's a redshirt freshman. He just has, and I keep saying, he's got a knack. He just seems like he knows, you know, his timing is good. His, you know, reading of, you know, where the seam is going to be is good. He just looks like he belongs out there. And he's a heady runner, and he runs the daylight. And there's just something about him that he just seems to know what he's doing. He doesn't look, you know, he looks much more experienced. And he's got a real talent. So he has to be in the mix, I think. I don't know that he'll ever be that kind of, you know, I think he's got a lot of power. And I think he shows it when he gets through the seam. I don't know if he'll ever be that kind of like Aka Cedric is, who just is sort of a hammer, where he's just gonna, you know, hit in there where there's nothing there and still, you know, make something, get down low and figure out a way to get through. Whereas Vavai is more of a guy who's seeing things down the field, seeing where they're gonna open up and all that. But I think he's definitely gonna play. As far as Isaiah and battling it out with Jack Jones, Isaiah has come ready to play. I mean, he looks like he really wants to be on the field. And he's in a different place from where he was a year ago. He's much more mature looking, and I think he realizes, you know, there's an open spot there. You know, I think Jack doesn't agree with that. Jack said, if there's an open corner spot, it's not mine. So that's going to be good competition. I like, you know, that kind of competition, I think, is really good, you know, for this team. But, yeah, that'll be a good one to keep our eyes on. And what you want is you want two guys to come out of there where they both can play and both can, you know, start and both can shut people down. And neither one's going to make a big mistake and all that. That's kind of where you hope this is going.
All right. Let's see. We got, so there was the Justin Davis part, and Vavai, being the downhill runner like Buck Allen. Okay. And then the cornerback competition. Okay. So we got that. That was all right. From me.
And I think Justin does have some of that. I mean, Vavai does have some of that Justin part. I'm not sure I would say the Buck Allen part, but he's a bigger, strong, you know, I don't know technically if he's going to weigh any more than Justin did. Justin got up, you know, he got close to 205 also, but he was taller, kind of a, you know, a lankier look, whereas Vavai is, you know, got that compact, you know, kind of frame that, he just has a different look when he runs the ball, but there's that, you know, Justin in him. Justin also had the ability to kind of know where the hole was going to open up and when it was going to open up, and he had some patience. And I think Vavai is showing that kind of patience that you don't always see from a young guy.
Okay, let's see. We'll move on. Next one, we had a couple from Eric in Duck Country. First one, he said, now that the scholarship numbers are up, does Coach Helton seem more comfortable with players hitting and tackling at full speed? Thanks, as always, Eric in Duck Country.
Well, they're doing more of it. There's no question about it. And he hasn't said that. Well, I don't even, you know, so much even thought about that. It just looks more natural. And I think part of that is from the competition. That's a good observation. I just think, yeah, they're more able to just not be all that worried about it. And the second part, I mean, you're seeing, because of the way Sam plays, they're letting it stay live longer on the quarterback. And you have to, with Sam, for example, because a lot of what he does is after that, you know, evading that first, you know, rusher, where, you know, so often and you know, when you watch college teams practice and scrimmage and what have you, you know, that first guy who makes a run at the quarterback, boop, plays dead. That doesn't happen with USC now. It might have happened a little bit more last year before people realized that it's just not fair to Sam, you know, to whistle those plays dead. So that keeps the, you know, the contact going a little bit longer. And, you know, there's a, I mean, yeah, Tuesday they were just, you know, shoulder pads and helmets. But every guy that caught the ball at the sidelines got drilled. I mean, absolutely drilled, you know, from one fence to the other. There was a lot of hitting going on. And it just seems like, yeah, that's the way you do it. And nobody's, you know, all that worried about it. And so, yeah, there's more going on. And it just seems more natural. And nobody seems terribly worried about it. So, you know, if you get lucky and everything goes through and, you know, they were decently lucky last year once they got started anyway, then you're better off being able to do this, cause it's much more game-like, even if it's just supposed to be thud or just supposed to be, you know, not taking them to the ground or, you know, hey, you got shorts on. That's not what we're seeing.
His second question was, he was talking about quality control assistant. He said, is the new coaching assistant Brian Ellis on the field now? What exactly does a quality control assistant do? Thanks, from Eric.
That's a good question. I think it's all different sorts of things, for all different sorts of programs. I actually don't think they're on the field ever. I think that's where that limitation comes in. And you're only allowed, you know, when is it? The 10, 9, coaches on the field, actually coaching, and the grad assistant. But, the other people, you know, like, when Sark was at Alabama last year, he was an analyst, I guess they called him in Alabama. He wasn't allowed to be on the field coaching players, until he got, you know, he replaced Lane, then he was allowed to be on the field coaching players. But, now, I think what they do mostly, they, you know, analyze film. They're in the meeting rooms. They, work on the practice plan. You know, they give you another set of eyes. They give you another thought about, you know, doing this or doing that. He was a quarterback in college and then he was around the, you know, and ended up being the play caller in the, Western Kentucky's Boca Raton Bowl, big win over where they scored 51 against Memphis this past year. He did not go with Jeff Brohm to Purdue from Western Kentucky, so he was available. He had been the quarterback for UAB when Neil Callaway was the coach. So he gives them another kind of savvy young guy. It gives him a guy, a Georgia guy, which probably will certainly help, you know, recruiting. But he also gives him another quarterback, a guy who's real comfortable with this offense, who is going to be able to look at things and, you know, have some more ideas. So they've got a, you know, bunch of quarterbacks, who are pretty comfortable with what they're doing offensively. And that's probably a good thing, but I don't think you're going to see him on the field.
All right, we have a voicemail question. I'm going to play this one for you. Here we go.
Hey, guys. This is Daniel out of Los Angeles. Just had a quick question for the recruiting podcast or any podcast that would be able to answer this. Just wondering, is USC its own culprit when student-athletes, specifically football and basketball, leave school early to pursue a professional career? And what I mean by that, if you think of any other conferences, and you know what, I'll throw the California Pac-12 schools in the mix as well. When you think of other conferences, specifically the Pac, the Power Five, not many other schools, maybe the Big Ten, not many other conferences academically can stack up against a USC, UCLA, Stanford, Berkeley, University of Washington, all in one conference. So with that being said, do these students feel a lot more comfortable with the academic degree that they're going to have behind them to go ahead and leave school early? Because it could almost be like almost a win-win scenario for them. Either they make it in the pros or they don't, but they still have that USC degree, they have that UCLA degree, they have that Stanford degree behind them. So either way, they're setting themselves up for success. So, and with that being said, do you think the Pac-12 schools are more of a disadvantage for kids leaving early because they know they have that academic background behind them in that degree, you know, for their future? Just a thought. Just wondering. Maybe I'm wrong. But thanks, guys. Pure Style Podcast is the best.
Yeah, I think the Pac-12, it works both ways. I mean, I think it probably, in some ways, the academic, you know, reputation and, you know, what it means to have a degree from a lot of the Pac-12 schools, I think in some ways that might keep a kid here that extra year when there's, a question between do I go and do I stay. I mean, or you know, like with the Dory Jackson, it got him to stay this semester. So he's taken, 12, even though he's, doing all the NFL stuff and getting ready and, you know, for the draft and what have you, he's still taking 12 hours and he'll have only 12 hours to complete his degree. And he figured, it'll make it a lot easier if I've only got 12 hours. If I got 24 hours, that's more of an, once I'm in the NFL, that's more of a time consuming, commitment. But 12 hours, he said, I'll figure I'll be able to do that. So he was certainly thinking about his degree. I think with a lot of those guys, I think there's no question. I think Isaac Whitney was the one who said, and he did so well and ran a 4.41 and just looked, great at pro day. Didn't get a chance to do as much at USC as he would have hoped for. But he's coming out of this, and I saw one of his tweets one day where he said, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I'm coming out of here with the USC degree. And not a sense of, I wish I'd, been able to do more, in football and all that kind of thing. So, I think it plays both ways, but I think in general, there's no question, you could feel better about a Pac-12 degree. I mean, you look at some of the other conferences. I was thinking about, the Big 12, you've got the University of Texas. And that's kind of, as far as kind of an elite, top 50, academic program, great graduate schools and professional schools and all that. And the Pac-12, you really do, you listed them all, all four California schools and Washington, University of Washington. You've got, five of those that, maybe the SEC, you've got, Vanderbilt and maybe, down near that 50 mark, say Florida. ACC, you do have the ACC, the one other one that might be in competition with, Duke and North Carolina and Virginia. So I think, I think there's a lot to be said for the academics of the Pac-12. And I think it's the kind of thing where, if you're recruiting a kid, out of Florida or Georgia or somewhere, it matters, to say, look, you come here and, that USC degree is really going to be worth something. I think, we talked to Deland McCullough, the new coach, and, some about his, about the way he will recruit. And that'll be a big part of it, I think, and I'm trying to think, let's see, if you match them up against the Big Ten, you've got Northwestern and Michigan, Wisconsin, not a pretty decent, and we're talking, not that any of these are, like bad schools, but in terms of, really, that top 25, top 50, not quite the same maybe as the Pac-12, but, the Pac-12, there's no question about it, the Power Five conference is the most, solid academic. And I think it does matter to these kids. I think it really does.
All right, we got one last one for you, Dan. and we'll let you go. We have Sean in Sacramento. Says, I always enjoy hearing your thoughts on the future of college football, particularly the possibility of forming 4 16-team super conferences. Many smart people like yourself have described before what such a system might look like for football and which schools would go where. But with March Madness upon us, it seems like an appropriate time to ask how basketball complicates the situation. For example, the Big East and the American Athletic Conference both contain perennial contenders in college basketball postseason, but not all of these schools have a football program strong enough to be in, one of the 16-team super conferences. What do you think will become of these predominantly basketball schools? Is there a place for them in the super conference system, and has the super conference conversation thus far been too football-centric, or will we start seeing more schools playing football in one conference and basketball in another? Thanks, Sean in Sacramento, Trojan alum and fellow St. Xavier Bomber.
Really? Yeah. Holy criminy.
Nice, Sean.
Whoa. Bomber. Okay. The Bombers ended up, they ended up changing their nickname. I can't even remember what they were, but they had a run of players who were just unbelievably talented football, basketball. One of them, you know, went to Notre Dame, and one of them was an NBA coach, and one of them was a basketball Hall of Famer, and they all came through it, you know, in the I think they're like the late 40s. And they changed the name to Bombers because they threw the ball. They had all these basketball players that could throw it and catch it. And they were doing it in ways in which nobody else had done in the Midwest and in high school football. So it's always good to hear from a, you know, a fellow Bomber. I think it works really well this way to have, you know, the football teams that, you know, the bowl teams and the teams that have a chance to win the national championship football. And football's always gonna, you know, rule the roost in terms of TV and TV money and influence and what have you. But as you see with college basketball, you know, you've got Gonzaga, you know, hanging in there. You got my Xavier University Musketeers made it to the Elite Eight at least. And I think that's one of the really neat things about college sports is that you can do it in the Big East, which is essentially all basketball schools like Xavier and Butler, and that they can be really, really good. And you know, you wish USC, you know, could figure out how to be as good as, you know, Xavier or Butler. And that two-tiered thing, I think, really works. That basketball, you know, the NCAA runs basketball. They get the money. They distribute it. They run the TV and all that. And in football, the schools themselves and the conferences, they run football. The NCAA doesn't get its hands on football, doesn't touch the bowls, doesn't touch the, you know, the college football playoff system. And I think that works really well. Now, if they start, you know, changing the way the conferences work and who's going to go where and all that, there will be some interesting decisions to make. Like, if you're going to affiliate, let's say, the Pac-12 and the Big 12, and you're going to come up with, say, 16 teams out of the whatever there are now, 22 in those two conferences, you're going to have to make some decisions like, do you take Kansas with their great basketball program and tradition and, you know, national following and TV impact and just no football program, you know, to speak of? You know, how do you make that decision in terms of, you know, where do you take somebody just because of their basketball program or how does that all work? I don't think we know. I mean, we've seen Notre Dame, you know, affiliate half football with the Atlantic Coast Conference, and then with all the other sports. Will there be some of that? You know, I don't know. I think there are times when you wonder about USC's future in the Pac-12. You know, would they be better off going the Notre Dame route down the road, and, you know, where they half affiliate and the rest of the sports and take football in a different direction when they realize, A, they're falling so far behind the Big Ten and the SEC in revenue, and, you know, how long do you say that it's fair for USC and Oregon State to get the exact same, you know, money from the TV contracts, which are significantly below what USC would get if they were in another conference. So, I think there are a lot of interesting questions, but I like the idea, though, of the football is one way and basketball is the other way. I mean, I just love it that, you know, Gonzaga's going to have a chance this weekend. And I think that was great. And Butler made it to the, you know, championship game twice not too long ago. And I think that's really, I think it's really cool to have, you know, just different ways of doing things in the different sports. I like that a lot. And I like it that the Big East was able to figure out how to, you know, come together as a conference without football. They got a great television deal with Fox and they get great exposure. I mean, you get much better, if you're Xavier or Butler, you get much better national exposure than you're, if you're USC. And yeah, you know, so there are ways of doing it if you're smart about it. And, you know, ways in which, if you're smarter than the Pac-12, I don't know that how hard that is in sports like basketball to be smarter than the Pac-12. But, you know, I like it that they figured it out and now they, you know, see if the Pac-12 can figure some things out. So far we haven't seen a great deal of evidence of that, but I like it that there are people out there where you can, if you're one of the Pac-12s, and say, hey, look at what those guys are doing. When are we going to do something like that? I think that's, so I like that, you know, I like the way things are going. The thing you can't like is what's happening, to cable TV, to, you know, the number of subscribers to ESPN and Fox and the way they're just dropping off and the way people are dropping off the cable grid. And what does that mean for these, you know, these big schools that are used to cashing the big, big checks from cable TV when the next round of, you know, contract talks come up? You know, is that one of the things that the big schools will be so, still so valuable in a, you know, this cable TV world where everything is broken up and, you know, in a million pieces? I saw that the Kentucky-North Carolina game drew had more than 20 million viewers last Sunday, which is, you know, more than almost any NBA game in you know, in history. And you just think that the, you know, the value of college athletics at the top level will always be really, you know, as good as anything you can get, you know, if you're an advertiser or if you're, you know, a cable network. So, but if I were one of the teams, like at the, I mean, you just wonder, like the Mountain West or the, you know, teams like that, American Athletic Conference. I mean, I could see a day where they're going to have to pay cable TV to put them on. You know, they're just not going to be people, you know, who are willing to pay really big dollars, you know, for some of those games. Whereas you would think, you know, a USC and a Notre Dame and a Texas and Oklahoma and, you know, Alabama, obviously, and all that, they're always going to be worth, you know, a great deal. But how that shakes out for the rest of, of college sports, I don't think we know. I don't think we can even guess. But it's sure going to be something to pay attention to because it's changing and changing fast.
It certainly is. All right. Well, Dan, great stuff. Thanks for coming on the show, and we'll see you out at the practice field tomorrow, Thursday. And it's open to the public, so if you want to come out 3 p.m., Howard Jones Field, come check it out.
Yeah, I can't wait. And it's fun. Come out and watch them. And the crowds are certainly picking up. There were a lot of people there Tuesday, a heck of a lot of people there Saturday. We still don't know when the second scrimmage is. They're only allowed three, and the third one will be April 15th, spring game. But we're not sure this Saturday or the next Saturday. I'm guessing since they didn't tell us, it might be more likely it's next Saturday than this Saturday, but we don't know.
Yeah.
And you know, but they're certainly worth coming out to watch.
For sure. The Saturday ones, especially, you can get off, if you're not going to work, you can go in at, with it 10 a.m., right? Usually they're starting.
10 a.m. Yep. 10 a.m. That was great. I mean, the crowd was just terrific, this past Saturday, and they got a great show. They really obviously enjoyed themselves. And I think a lot of people just enjoyed seeing a lot of the former players who came out, which was fun.
Yeah. So. Cool. Well, thanks again, Dan, and everyone else. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Most people know that buying or selling real estate is no small undertaking. Understanding the market value of your home, pricing, advertising, closing, and perhaps even selling personal property along the way are all examples of the real estate journey. And Michael Moline Real Estate has the experience to help make that journey an enjoyable one. Southern California real estate inventories are at historic lows, so there is no better time than now to sell your residential property. Whether you're moving into a bigger home or downsizing, personal property is often a component of the real estate transaction. Michael Moline Real Estate has industry expertise to help you with both your real property and your personal property as you get ready to transition. Michael Moline Real Estate specializes in properties located on the west side of Los Angeles and the southern San Fernando Valley communities. Allow Michael Moline Real Estate to give you a free comparative market analysis and home valuation so you know how much your home is worth today. Contact Michael Moline at michaelmolinerealestate.com. That's Michael, M-O-L-I-N-E, Real Estate.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.